WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, in for Terry Gross. The first Godfather movie ends with Michael Corleone, played by Al Pacino, wiping out his enemies, the heads of the five rival mob families and traitors in his own family, including Carlo, his brother-in-law. Michael has always suspected that Carlo was complicit in the murder of his older brother, Sonny.
You have to answer for Santino, Carlo.
Mike, you got it all wrong.
You fingered Sonny for the Barzini people. Ah, that little farce you played with my sister. You think that could fool the Corleone?
Mike, I'm innocent. I swear to kids. Please, Mike, don't do this.
Sit down.
Please.
Barzini's dead. So is Philip Tattaglia. Mo Green. Stracci. Cuneo. Today I settle all family business, so don't tell me you're innocent, Carlo. Admit what you did. Get him a drink. Come on. Don't be afraid, Carlo. Come on, you think I make my sister a widow? I'm godfather to your son, Carlo. Go ahead, drink. No, Carlo, you're out of the family business. That's your punishment. You're finished. I'm putting you on a plane to Vegas. Tom? I want you to stay there. You understand?
Uh-huh.
Only don't tell me you're innocent. Because it insults my intelligence. It makes me very angry.
Carlo has a very short trip ahead of him, but it's not on a plane, and he never makes it to Vegas. This month, The Godfather Returns. That's the name of a new novel about the Corleone family, based on the characters created by Mario Puzo, who died in 1999. The Godfather Returns was written by Mark Weingartner, who won the job when Random House held a contest to find an author to follow in Puzo's literary footsteps. The new novel fills in some of the gaps in the Corleone family narrative, covering events and years not covered in either the book or the famous Godfather films. In 1996, Terry Gross spoke with Mario Puzo, who wrote The Godfather in 1969. He also co-wrote all the Godfather screenplays. People have always assumed he had some inside connection to the mafia, which he always denied. But Puzo told Terry that many of the stories in the Godfather novel and films came from his family.
You know, like the rug stealing scene and the keeping of the guns from the police, you know, that kind of stuff that happened in the family.
Well, tell the story the way it was told to you.
Well, my brother, who's older than me, this guy threw his guns over the airway, you know, the space between apartments, and my mother took them and held them for him, and then he came and got back his guns, and he said, would you like a rug? So she sent my brother over to get the rug. And my brother didn't realize the guy was stealing the rug until he took out the gun when the cop came. So that's almost entirely in the book and in the movie, you know. And there's little stuff like that.
Now, how did your mother feel about protecting this guy's guns?
Oh, in those days, this is when I was a very little kid, that was thought of as nothing. You know, that was like he was a neighbor and he wanted you to do it, and you did it because you were afraid of him, because you hoped, you know, that he would help you out.
Do you think your mother looked at the mob figures in your neighborhood as people who could protect your family, or as people who were more likely to harm your family?
No, protect. Because... for instance, the business about the dog being permitted to stay in the apartment, that happened to my family. My mother didn't want to get rid of the dog, so she went to the local guy of respect. I don't even think they thought of them as criminals. There were people who had influence, the way you would go down to your congressman, for instance.
Did she do anything to pay respect to the local organized crime figures who in part controlled the neighborhood?
Well, you have to remember that those figures are usually related by blood, you know, and were members of a family, so you gave them presents. If you had a family member who was powerful, you made sure that you gave him a present at Christmas, you know, or a special occasion, which was not regarded as a payoff in any way. It was, for instance, my parents grew up in Italy where, since they were mostly illiterate, when they had a letter that had to be read, they would go to the local priest to have the priest read it for them, but they would automatically bring a gift. They'd bring three or four eggs or, you know, chicken or something like that. It's a whole different relationship. It wasn't a bribe, it's a mark of respect. It's not like they said, you got to give me a piece of chicken or you got to give me an egg and I'll read it for you. It was just understood in the same way the local neighborhood guys that had influence, you gave them presents.
Describe Don Corleone the way you first envisioned him.
He was sort of very much like you had a brother who was much older than you, who would always protect you, you know, who would always stick up for you. He was somebody who was a protector.
I'm wondering if the character of Don Corleone was changed in your mind when Marlon Brando was cast in the film and you saw Marlon Brando inhabit the character.
No, I'm the guy that picked Brando.
You did pick Brando?
Oh, sure. I wrote him a letter and he called me up and we had a chat, and then I tried to get Paramount to take him and they refused. And then when the director came on the picture, I talked to the director, Francis Copeland. He managed to talk Paramount into letting Brando play the role. But it was my idea to cast Brando, which caused me a lot of trouble before it finally got done.
What did you say in your letter to Marlon Brando when you were inviting him to play the part?
I think it was something like, help, they're going to kill me. They're going to cast, I think it was Danny Thomas as the guy.
Danny Thomas? Wow.
Yeah. Well, he was going to buy Paramount so he could play the role. At that time, Paramount wasn't really worth that much, and Danny Thomas was very rich off television. And I read an item, he was going to buy Paramount Pictures so he could play The Godfather. So that scared me so much, I wrote a letter to Brando. I knew some people who knew him, so, you know, I had an entree. And he gave me very good advice. He said, no studio will hire me. Wait until you get a director, and then talk to the director. And he's quite right. When I talked to the studio, they swore they would never hire Brando.
Why were they so opposed to the idea?
Well, because Brando had built up what to them was a terrible reputation of being a troublemaker. You know, on his Mutiny on the Bounty, we cost him a lot of money, and you know, he was always a rebel. So they didn't want him in their movies. He was too much of a headache, and his movies had been flops.
Did he cause any trouble for you on the set?
No, well, I was never on the set, but they tell me it was perfect. You know, every actor just loved the idea of working with Brando. He's their idol. So, and when he came on the picture, he caused no trouble for the director. He caused no trouble for the actors. He was, they really liked him.
Now, what were some of the most difficult parts of adapting the novel into the screenplay?
You mean the first one?
Yeah,
the
novel of The Godfather.
It was a cinch.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it was a cinch because it was the first time I'd ever written a screenplay, so I didn't know what I was doing, you know, and it came out right. And the story I tell is that after I had won two Academy Awards, you know, for the first two Godfathers, I went out and bought a book on screenwriting because I figured I'd better learn, you know, what it's about, because it was sort of off the top of my head. And then the first chapter of the book said, study Godfather 1 as the model of a screenplay. So I was stuck with the book.
Now, I'm wondering, with the dialogue, everything is so, I mean, not everything, but the characters who really have power are very euphemistic in their language. So they could be saying, they could be giving you the message that they're going to kill you unless you follow their orders, but they'll be saying it in the nicest way. And of course, killing would never be mentioned. Everything's kind of beneath, you know, between the lines, beneath the surface. What made you write the dialogue for these powerful, violent people in that coded way?
Well, it does come from the way the Sicilian mafia operated. In fact, there was a funny story that an Englishman came to live in Sicily, and he got a kidnapping note, because they like to collect the money for kidnapping you before they kidnap you, so they didn't have to go to the bother of kidnapping you. That was the way they operated. But the Sicilian mafia wrote this Englishman such a flowery note that he really didn't understand what they were saying. He had to get an interpreter in. He thought they were paying him some sort of compliment. He didn't realize they wanted like 50 grand off him before they kidnapped him, so to save everybody the trouble of going through the kidnapping. But it was very flowery. Your Eminence, we love you, you know, we'll do anything for you. If you have any trouble, give us a call, you know. And meanwhile, just send us 50 grand and you'll never have any trouble with anybody. But that's how they talk. That's where I got it from. You know, that. And that horse's head thing was strictly from Sicilian folklore. They nailed the head of your favorite dog to your door as the first warning if you didn't pay the money. They were great believers in collecting money before doing the job.
One of the most famous lines that you came up with was about making an offer you can't refuse.
Yeah.
Does that line have its roots in mob lore that you knew, or did
I made it up. I wrote memos on how we could plant that line because I was sure it would become a famous line. You know, I recognized the fact it would become one of those lines that people would always be using. So that was really sort of carefully constructed, you know.
Well, when Johnny was first starting out, he was signed to this personal service contract from the big band leader. And as his career got better and better, he wanted to get out of it. Now, Johnny is my father's godson. And my father went to see this band leader. And he offered him $10,000 to let Johnny go. But the band leader said no. So the next day, my father went to see him, only this time with Luca Brasi. And within an hour, he signed a release for a certified check of $1,000.
How did he do that?
My father made him an offer he couldn't refuse.
What was that?
Luca Brasi held a gun to his head, and my father assured him that either his brains or his signature would be on the contract. That's a true story.
A scene from The Godfather, with Al Pacino as Michael and Diane Keaton as Kay. We'll hear more of Terry's 1996 interview with Mario Puzo after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with Godfather author Mario Puzo. The Godfather Returns, a new novel by Mark Weingartner, is based on the characters created by Puzo.
Did you come up with the expression Godfather?
Yeah. And that was really an accident. Because before I used that, no mafia man ever used the word Godfather in that sense. Nobody used it. And I got it from an Italian family culture. The friend of your parents, when you're a little kid, your parents have very close friends, you call them godfather and godmother the way in the American culture you call family friends aunt and uncle, even though they're not your aunt and uncle. You know, if they're a close family friend, you know, and you're a kid, you say that's auntie or uncle so-and-so. So that was just the only way in which it was used, except this, in the religious sense. So I remembered it, and the more I used it during the book, the more it became, you know, what it was. So now the mafia uses it, everybody uses it, you know, and the word didn't exist.
Your novel and the Godfather movies have had such an impact on American popular culture. And I'm wondering what you think it is about the stories that enabled them to have the impact that they had.
Well, I think it's a story with warm personal family feeling. And I think also it's everybody's wish, I mean, that they would have somebody they could go to who would correct all their injustices without the problems of going to court, hiring a lawyer, you know, somebody fixing up your world for you.
And if you cross them, you'd be dead.
But that's okay, because why would you want to cross them if they, you know, did everything for you?
Of course, everybody does end up there's always a bloodbath.
People are not perfect.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you become a reader and a writer? You've said that your parents were nearly illiterate.
They were illiterate, yeah. And because of the public libraries and the Settlement House Library, the Hudson Gill Settlement House Library, and you started to read, and it was just the greatest thing in the world to read, that's all.
What did your parents think of you reading? It was something that they couldn't do. Were they proud of you for being able to do it?
No. I wrote a line someplace where my mother regarded my library card with the same horror that present-day mothers look at their son's heroin needles. You know, I made some sort of comparison to that. Reading was not relevant. Reading didn't help you make a living, you know?
Wrong.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So what did they think you should be doing? What did your mother think you should be doing instead?
Oh, you know, good clerical job on the inside. If you could avoid hard labor, that was the big thing.
Mm-hmm. How have you reacted to criticisms from Italians, for instance, that in American popular culture, Italians are always shown as mob figures, and criticisms from people who say that the Godfather movies were just really violent and, you know, up the amount of violence in American popular culture?
Yeah, well, it sounds like some of my relatives, but but to me, it's a completely irrelevant thing. For one thing, there was a time when Italians ran crime in America, so I'm not maligning them in any way. In fact, I present them as very lovable people, you know, that have to make a living, unfortunately, in a way that society doesn't approve. But also, I know that most Italians that I grew up with was so law-abiding, they, you know, that getting a traffic ticket was terrible, you know? You know, for the working-class Italian people.
Have you always operated very strictly inside the law?
Myself?
Yeah.
Very much so, except in one incident. Because, well, let me see if I can phrase it properly. I would have become a criminal if I had the nerve, but since I didn't have the nerve to be a criminal, I decided to become a writer.
You think you would have become a criminal if you had the nerve?
Sometimes when I'm dealing with movie studios.
Does it bring out your most violent impulses?
Well, yeah, you know, there's sometimes when you want to... You only wish that you could go to a Godfather and say, you know, get these guys out of my shoe, you know?
Well, why? What's an example of something that has made you really angry, made you feel really crossed that a film studio has done?
Well, not on artistic grounds, by the way. I had an unfortunate couple of experiences where I wrote screenplays that were very successful. Not Paramount, by the way. I'm not talking about the Godfather movies, other movies, where I had to sue to get my money, my percentage of the, you know, the movie turned out to be very profitable, and I collect the percentage on the back end, and I have to sue to get my back end. And at that time, I was so innocent, I thought that was so outrageous that here I had given them a piece of work that earned them a great deal of money. Why wouldn't they want to give me my share, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so they'd put up legal blocks that you have to fight, and then they surrender in the end, but after they cost you a great deal of money, you know. And also, it's insulting, you know. You feel you've done a good bit of work, you've earned the money, and then they don't want to pay you. You know, it's It's so ungrateful. You feel when you're innocent like that, it's so ungrateful of them. Then after a while, you get used to it.
Well, Mario Puzo, a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you very much for talking with us.
All right, thank you very much.
Mario Puzo, speaking to Terry Gross in 1996. He died 3 years later. The characters from his most famous work, The Godfather, are explored further in a new book called The Godfather Returns, written by Mark Weingartner.